Echo Plus.
Hello and welcome to Echo Plus program. My name's John Harrison. Now that the American budget problem has been solved, albeit for a while, war in Syria doesn't seem to be on the cards, one would think that the world is getting back to normal and it's business as usual. Well, it is, if you ignore those pesky little voices that talk about climate change problems. One such group of voices are those who point out that it is very likely that food production will not be able to keep pace with the growing population. In September, the charity Oxfam published a report indicating that population increase plus climate change will most likely result in 1 in 5 people being at risk of hunger by 2050, and child malnutrition will increase by 20%. The charity also cites statistics which will show that world crop yields could fall by between 10 and 20%, also by 2050. And the price of staple foods will most likely double in the next few decades. In short, many groups, and not only Oxfam, are saying that an ever-increasing population plus climate change problems equals bad news. How accurate are these claims? What should we do? To answer this and other related problems, I welcome to the studio Professor Boris Porfiriev, corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Sciences and deputy director of the Institute for Economic Forecasting of the Russian Academy of Sciences. I also welcome on the phone from the UK, John McGrath, Oxfam researcher and co-author of a report on world hunger called Growing Disruption. Welcome both of you to the programme.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's start off by asking you, please, in your opinions, how accurate are these claims that the United Nations and other people are making about a doomsday scenario of 1 in 5 people going hungry by 2050?
We can see, I think, in future, if the temperature increases to 2 degrees, but on current rates of carbon emissions by perhaps 4 degrees by 2050 or 2060, then the effects on productivity of crops will be absolutely devastating, and that translates into hunger, both directly in terms of lost production, but also in terms of the effects on people's livelihoods. And this is the other area that I think has not been really understood so far. It's not simply that rising temperatures and changing seasons have an impact directly on crops, which is well known. It's a simple physiological phenomenon. But also that the very people who grow them are going to be impoverished.
Mm-hmm. Boris?
First of all, as far as the scenarios are concerned, these are quite different. My colleague is talking about this could be, as I should label it, as a worst scenario, one of the worst scenarios, okay? Mm-hmm. But there are also different scenarios. It's number one. And number two is that the impact of the temperatures increases is not very uniform. Is different upon the globe. And I agree, and I buy the argument that, well, some big regions of the world, especially in the tropics, would be mostly affected, both people and ecosystems, and of course those ecosystems which help to produce crops. Mm-hmm. However, for instance, as if I take my own country, Russia, I will see that there will be quite a controversial impact. For instance, in the north we have an extension of a vegetation period and increase in cereals. It's already happening, by the way. On the other hand, we have, again, in the very rough terms, we have the south regions, and we have Siberia, where the impact, of course, is negative. So all in all, it will be quite controversial, but as far as a warning is concerned, as an alert produced by this report, I will buy this.
Okay, I think we're talking about two different things, aren't we, under the same umbrella. We're talking about the effect of the increase of the world's population as one thing. And secondly, we're talking about the effect of climate change on food production. So those two areas are related, though, aren't they? They're marching forward together. John, what would you say is the most important thing? Because it seems to me in your report you're really talking about climate change. Are you talking about population increase as well?
Well, population increase and also changing demands for food. Generally, many countries have become wealthier, so demand for meat, for example, has increased. So, yes, the problem is that the world is approaching a crunch point. I mean, the levels of production of cereals have tended to flatten out over the last years. We're hitting rather a glass ceiling in terms of the science of producing, unlike in the Green Revolution, of producing more productive cereals. at the same time as the population's increasing and diets are changing. But I would add that I do think there's another dimension to this, and I referred to it in my earlier comment, which is that it is not simply that there are different regional impacts, as Boris has absolutely rightly pointed out, but there are different impacts depending on your socioeconomic status. My colleagues in Moscow did a report recently called After the Drought, which was about the experiences of Russian farmers following on from the 2010 drought and the 2012 drought, and they were looking at the experiences of smallholder farmers or relatively small farmers, and they have been really badly hit. You know, you are seeing people who are getting into serious debt. Many of the farms are, in their opinion, almost bankrupt. They're having to, or they have had to, sack many of their employees.
In which country are we talking about here?
Are we talking about Russia? Yes. I mean, they've also, in many cases, had to adapt to this by actually reducing the area that they cultivate. So I think, you know, thinking that climate change will benefit growing crops in Russia, yes, perhaps in totality, but there will be enormous adjustments that I think will have to be made, and there will be big impacts on the poorer farmers and those who have the least ability at the moment to adapt.
I agree with John completely, and these heavy rains, for instance, in the Far East this year is a very, very good illustration of the point. I should also add into the argument about this socioeconomic status, especially level of income, which is clearly quite different, and small landholders are really badly affected. I would also add another point which exacerbates the impact. I mean, this is very low penetration of insurance, which is not very spread widely in Russian agriculture. We know that in the Far East, only 2% of farmers use insurance schemes, and all in all in Russia, it's only 12%. So I mean that if the people, in fact, want just in that or that way compensate or just get some aid, well, this is a point. This is a bad point, too. Yeah.
Insurance is potentially a major potential for social protection, but in the interviews in which my colleagues in Russia conducted about people's how people were coping, there was this widespread distrust of insurance, and people were very, very reluctant to take up insurance even when it was an offer, and they said it needs to be more affordable, it needs to be less risky, and we need to have trust in the companies and in the process in the case of Russia. So I think there's a huge amount that could be done in terms of simplifying the insurance, of making it more comprehensive so it meets the needs of the smaller farmers, of reducing red tape, and then, as Boris is saying, there'll be a much greater uptake of insurance.
Okay, thanks Boris and John for that interesting point.
Echo Plus.
My name's John Harrison. Today we're talking about potential world food shortages. I'm talking to Professor Boris Porfiriev, corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Sciences and deputy director of the Institute for Economic Forecasting at the Russian Academy of Sciences. Also on the phone from London, John McGrath, Oxfam researcher and co-author of a recent report on world hunger called Growing Disruption. Now, we've been talking about whether or not we are actually facing problems, and although we've had a sort of diverse conversation about mostly Russia, Russian problems, I think all three of us on this program agree that the world is facing hunger problems. Now, let's move on. Russia's case, it's a very special case. It's a massively huge country with a huge potential for agricultural development. Other countries aren't in such a fortunate position. We're talking about North Africa and so on. Now, what are we going to do internationally to head off these problems? Boris, what's your idea?
Well, number one, I should say that we should do everything to keep on this this issue as a high-profile issue, really.
Yeah.
This is really important, just to not put it or just to put it down on the international agenda. It's really important, because sometimes it happens as early as this financial bubbles come up, or these issues, you know, well, diminishing. Okay. Number two is we should, of course, I believe that we should increase international cooperation in the area of research and development, because it's really important first to do this research as far as, for instance, developing these cultures sustainable to this impact, both to dry areas and wet areas. Mm-hmm. And recollect the best experience I should recollect of the 1970s, this Green Revolution, when Norman Borlaug just developed this staples in both in Bangkok in International Rice Institute and Tritical wheat in Mexico.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, you're losing me. Are you talking about bioengineering or genetic modified crops?
No, not at all. No, I know. I'm talking about what is called selection science. I mean, okay. Selection breedings, but not necessarily GM. Not necessarily. This could be only part of the solution, but not from my perspective, not the major solution.
So you see the problem, the solution to the problem being in more research and development and developing better types of crops.
Better types, yes. Better adjusted, better adapted to this climate change impact, both in dry uh-huh. areas and wet areas.
Okay.
And the second point, just a small amendment, is just to help exchanging of the results of this research and development, because it's a problem to exchange this result between developed and developing countries who have access
right.
to these patents, licenses, whatever.
Okay. Right, okay. John, what your point of view here?
Yes, well, I mean, I absolutely agree with Boris. Keeping high okay. profile and increasing international cooperation on research and development. I think, though, I would add that this investment or assistance must target small producers who still produce approximately half of the world's food.
Yeah.
And too often they're sidelined. And I think there are a number of things that can be done there. I think, for example, food reserves, local, regional, national levels are very important. Social protection measures. So to move away, in a sense, from an agenda that looks at climate change impacts on agriculture as a purely agricultural problem, mm-hmm. to look at the socio-economic solutions. And I think social protection measures, rapid response in terms of humanitarian work and disaster risk reduction are equally important. Can I say one other thing, which is simply that unless we reduce the rate at which the world is emitting carbon, then we are committed to a path in which we really cannot predict the speed and the scale of the climate changes that are coming yeah. down the road.
Yeah, but even if we don't limit the amount of carbon, you're still going to have a massive increase in the world's population. I mean, you're still going to face problems even without climate change, and climate change just exacerbates the existing
yes.
problem.
Yes, yes, and no, I don't disagree at all with that. And in fact, we already have a fair degree of climate change, which is already built into the system because yeah. of the persistence of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases within the atmosphere. Even if we stopped entirely tomorrow, which is clearly impossible, yeah. there mm. is future heating in the system, and particularly coming out of the oceans. So yeah. we do have to adapt, as Boris has said, and research and development in agriculture is crucial to that, but so is looking at the impacts not only on the crops we grow, but on the people who grow the crops.
Okay, so, fair enough. So if I can briefly resume from this very short program on a topic which you could probably do 2-hour programs on a series of 39 weeks long running, you know,
and still
not get to the end of the subject. But I think we all agree that food production is a problem, and it's going to become more and more a problem as the next few decades go by. Our children are going to experience problems like we've never dreamed of in that regard. We've also, all of us have agreed that one very good way forward is to spend more money and time on research and development of more efficient crops. And John McGrath's other main point is that we need to think about the smallholder. We need to think about the yeah. small farmer. We need to think about insurance and all the other things that go with that. And I would just like to add, in my opinion, that we need to learn to work together. Governments still do need to talk, sit down and talk, because none of these things are going to happen one country at a time. It's only going to manifest if it's bound by international yes, agreements and everybody follows those yeah, agreements. Sure. Does everybody agree on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, in that case, I'm afraid I'm going to have to bring this very short program to a close. Thank you very much indeed, Professor Boris Porfiriev,
okay, my pleasure.
Corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, and John McGrath, a researcher and the co-author of a new report on world hunger for Oxfam called Growing Disruption. Thank you, listeners, for being with us. Don't forget, we have a Facebook page. It's called Echo Plus Russia, three separate words, where you can download all our programs. Thank you and goodbye.